did you find this?
Craig's here.
Hello, Craig.
Craig's here.
What up, Craig?
Hey, dudes. It's ladies' night.
We made another week.
That's right. We're on a Friday.
It's like less than 100 days till football.
Oh, my God. The countdown begins.
Yeah. It is funny, though, explaining to people what we do. And they're like, yeah, like I'm excited for the season. I'm like, you have no idea how much shit we have done since fucking January.
Yeah,
I know. I was telling a buddy at work. He's like, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, oh, you know, it's Friday. I got to record my podcast. And he was like, what are you guys even talking about? It's like 4 months till football. I'm like, we're doing team profiles, dude. Like, he's like, what do you even talk? He's like, what do you even talk to? I'm like, there's tons of stuff to talk about. I was like, the draft, how the teams are, your predictions. Like, there's tons of stuff to talk about.
I approach this like if you turned off your TV at the end of the Super Bowl and haven't paid attention to anything until right now, these episodes, I want you to feel like you caught up with everything.
Yeah, correct. Sure, I mean, sure. That's why we always do like a throwback, right? Of like, hey, check out our old episode just in case, right? Because like, we can't expect everybody to be as fucking degenerate as we are, right? Like, my dad even said, he's like, what are you like doing? Like, same thing with Ryan's buddy. And I was like, oh, this. And I like showed him my notes of like the Giants. And he's like, I created a monster last, like when I showed you Red Zone. I was like, yeah, you did. So thanks for that.
See, my mom is like, oh, I'm so excited for your new episodes. And I'm like, you're the best.
What a hero.
Well, your mom listens because for the comedy. That's why your mom listens.
I think that's why everyone does.
I make too many dark jokes. My mom had to stop listening. She's like, you make too many threats against people. I can't be associated with this.
In our earlier episodes, my dad, this was probably like a year ago. He was like, you guys say fuck a lot. And I was like, I guess maybe that's true, but
we could tone it down, right?
Mr. Edgecombe, I'm so sorry.
We got to get our sponsorship from Liquid Death, so we'll tune it up for next episode. No swears.
Liquid fuck.
Okay, so hey, I heard word on the grapevine is the New York Football Giants are expecting the imminent retirement of Darren Waller.
That is right. After his posthumous breakup song for the New York Giants. This was not for his ex-wife. It was definitely for his. When I listened to it through the at the beginning of the week, and I was expecting it to be like some hip hop R&B trash, but it started with like a acoustic guitar, and I'm like, what the hell am I listening to?
It was sad boy music.
Yeah.
And for the record, there is like a big movement towards like guitars in hip hop over the last few years.
Sure, sure.
Lil Wayne did it like a decade ago.
Oh man, Lil Wayne playing guitar is so, the fact that he like was playing a sold out Madison Square Garden and spent 15 minutes noodling on a guitar in front of people is my favorite shit.
I feel like I just aged myself by making that reference because I'm like thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, that was like a decade ago.
Yeah. Oh yeah, put out a rock album
a while ago.
All right, so we've got three teams. We've got New Orleans, we've got Pittsburgh, and we got Carolina this week. But before we do that, we've got some segments to get through. So Ryan, why don't you set this bitch off, as they say?
Spoiler: I'm doing a tight end this week, guys.
What?
You know, one of the greatest tight ends to ever play in the NFL, in my opinion. He's got records to prove it. He's been a Chicago Bear. He's been a Green Bay Packer. He's been a Seattle Seahawk, and he's mostly known for playing with Drew Brees in his early career in the early aughts, with the New Orleans Saints. I want to talk about Mr. Jimmy Graham.
Ben Watson. Oh, okay. Yeah. Never
mind. Juwan Johnson. yeah. Jimmy Graham, born in North Carolina. A suburb of Raleigh, I think it was Goldsboro. He had a really bad upbringing. His parents like disowned him at like age 11, so he was raised in like a church kind of adoption environment.
A cult. He was in a cult.
Yeah, he was. Well, he after his parents gave him up, he went into the system, obviously, but then
so he's you Mormon? Know some.
No, I think this is some type of Christian community. But he really excelled in basketball. The guy's like 6'7", was a really good basketball player. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say he was really good at basketball. His college stats weren't that great to look at. He was averaging like, I don't know, 6 or 7 points a game.
Which is crazy when you're 6'7", right? Like,
right.
You got to be a little bit higher. You can dunk.
Yeah. Right. And he played for, and I think part of that was because he played for the Miami Hurricanes, which, you know, attracts a lot of basketball talent. So he could have got diluted in that. But he ended up playing like a year of football, I want to say his junior or senior year, and was really rough in the sport. But in, let's see, in 2010, the Saints saw some promise. This was around the time when NFL scouts and stuff started looking at basketball players for the tight end position. And he was one of the first greats to excel at this. He was chosen, let's see, the third round, the 95th overall selection, signed a 4-year rookie deal. He only played in 5 games in his first season because at that time they still had on the Saints, they had Jeremy Shockey at the end of his career. that's another player we can talk about later, but another great tight end. Everyone knows him from was the Giants, right?
Shane, do you know Jeremy Shockey?
Yeah, he's a bigot.
I was going to say, imagine if Chris Kyle played football. He's literally American Sniper tight end.
But so his sophomore season, the 2011 season, I believe Shockey retired or got traded or something. He was no longer with the team. So Jimmy Graham became the starting tight end, and he ended up doing great, great, great things. All right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Well, wait,
yeah. 2011 Ryan, season.
Ryan, did this spark your tight end love? Like, I'm always curious of like when people's interest in things kick off. Was like Jimmy Graham your first like love of football?
Probably, at least for the tight end position. It probably had something to do with it. But this guy, so he had in the 2011 season, he had 99 receptions for over 1,300 yards and 11 touchdowns.
It's like Kyle Made Pitts.
Yep. he became the first tight end in Saints history to have more than 1,000 yards in a season. He set the franchise record for receptions in a season while tying Marcus Colson, his 2007 record for touchdowns in a season. Let's see. During Saints' Week 17 win over the Panthers, Graham broke Kellen Winslow's NFL record of 1,290 receiving yards in a season by a tight end. However, that record was broken literally hours later by a Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame tight end, Rob Gronkowski.
Okay.
Who ended up with 1,327 yards that year. Graham ended up with 1,310.
Jeez.
Yeah. Let's see. So that ties him, I believe, as number two for tight ends as the best seasons by a tight end. Obviously Rob Gronkowski had that season. So that's the number two record in, of all tight ends in NFL history, record season.
Damn.
His next season was pretty good too. He didn't set the records that year. He had, let's see. He did have a career high game against the Falcons in week 10, where he had 146 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Jesus.
Yeah, that year he almost had 1,000 yards and 85 receptions and 9 receiving touchdowns. 2013, he had a streak of 4 consecutive games with at least 100 receiving yards and tied that record for tight ends. I believe that was probably Rob Gronkowski that tied that too. He ended that season with 1,215 yards, and he led the NFL that year in receiving touchdowns. Take a guess how many touchdowns he had that year.
14.
16.
He led the NFL. That's correct, Tony. 16 touchdowns.
I'm going to act like I knew that.
I was like, it's not fair. You were watching at the time.
That's true.
Were you guys playing fantasy at this point?
Yes.
The first fantasy league that I can, like, I played with my, I was on a fantasy team with my dad when I was, like, younger, but it was, like, a mail-in type of deal. The first fantasy league that I can remember playing in was probably about 2006, 2007.
So when these players were putting up these crazy numbers, were they like first round picks at all, or was tight end still like devalued?
No, I mean, Jimmy Graham probably was because of his consecutive three seasons with the Saints and then Drew Brees' chemistry. He had to have been.
But Gronk, was Gronk up there? Was he a first rounder too?
Oh, Gronk was always, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Dude, how we have fallen from tight end glory.
Yeah, I mean, to this day, those him and Gronk, like those that 2011 season, it's going to be tough for a tight end to break those numbers. I mean, over 1,300 yards for a tight end, that's
like
crazy.
Almost, that's like fucking elite wide receiver numbers.
Well, and what's crazy too is, like I said, he set the record, and then hours later, Gronk broke it. You know, because they were playing at noon and the Patriots were playing at 3.
That sucks.
You know,
I'm looking right now, according to fantasyfootballcalculator.com, 12 team PPR league pre-draft rankings, 2011. Jimmy Graham was going, the fifth pick in the sixth round.
Wow.
Well, that was
not his breakout
before. Here. Yeah. Remember his first season, he only started 5 games. So no one thought shit of him. What if you look up 2012 or 2013?
I moved up to 2013. Let's see what it says. 2013, Jimmy Graham, obviously tight end 1. He was going pick 202.
Okay. So nothing has truly changed. Just the amount of points scored has gone lower.
Right.
So he actually only ended up playing 3 seasons with the Saints for some reason. And then they traded him because they probably got a bunch of picks or whatever.
No, you remember, don't you remember this? He was the first big, like, struggle between the team and the player about classifying him as either a slot receiver or a tight end.
That's right. Yeah,
I think you covered this, Tony.
Yeah, because it was about money, and he was fighting for, like, receiver money, and they didn't want to pay him. That's right.
Right. Yep.
But anyway, so he ended up after 2013 and having 3 awesome freaking years with Drew Brees. He ended up going to the Seahawks, where, let's see, in only 3 seasons, he played 14 to 16 with the Seahawks. He set the Seahawks franchise record for most receptions, most receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns at the tight end position.
Jesus Ooh. Christ.
I don't remember who was passing him the ball. That was Wilson, right?
Yeah, that was Russell.
Yeah.
That's Russ.
When Russell was in his heyday and was freaking super awesome.
Dude, he's Mr. Unlimited. He's coming back this year.
Oh, we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Okay. Did his stint in Seattle for 3 years. Then he went to the Packers. Or was it the Bears first?
It was the Packers.
No, it was the Packers. Did okay. He went to the Bears after that. And he had some good games with the Bears. There was 1 year, didn't he have like 8 or 10 touchdowns?
Yeah, on like 18 catches.
Yeah, that was like the first year that he played with them. Then his career started going downhill. He ended up finishing, the Saints signed him for the last year of his career, which was like, was that 21 or 22?
No, he was last year.
Yeah, he played last year.
It was?
He was a Bear.
No, he was a...
No,
he was,
no, he was, a, he, was on the, he was a Saint.
He was on the Saints last year. Yeah.
The Saints picked him up for his last year.
Yeah, I know we fucked you over, bro, but come on down.
Welcome back.
Right. And he didn't do very much. Actually, it's kind of weird when you read about this too, is it, he has some type of thing going on with seizures, and he actually was arrested last year because the cops thought he was on like heavy drugs because he was just like wandering through traffic and shit.
Yeah.
It turns out he was having like a medical episode, which brings me to my next point too, because I'm also reading that Jimmy Graham is like a pilot. But how do you have your how do they allow you to have a pilot's license if you have a medical condition where you could just randomly have seizures, I don't understand how that's possible, but
this is America, right?
I guess so. You probably have to sign a waiver to go fly with them or something.
No, I was going to say, you probably just sit him down and he plays like Flight Simulator.
Yeah.
I got a license. Yeah. Proud of you, Jimmy.
He does do a lot with the youth. He has the Jimmy Graham Foundation. Let's see. He helps out. Yeah. At-risk youth and military veterans through that foundation, which actually got him a Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee award in 2020 when he was with the Bears. But yeah, that's one of the greatest tight ends to ever play. And I'm so glad that I got to watch him play with Drew Brees, because that shit was just electric.
Thank you, Sean Payton.
Right?
Fuck Sean.
Jimmy Graham.
I do also have a theory. So, like, that might have been Ryan's, like, intro into it. But his real sicko face started when FanDuel started letting you play DFS. Because Ryan and I would sit around and get absolutely toasted. And some dude that we've never heard of would catch a touchdown. And our bit was we'd turn to each other and be like, I started him in a lineup this week.
Yeah. I checked my FanDuel fantasy thing. And it really didn't become like, because it was such a gray area in the aughts or in the teens. I've actually been playing on FanDuel since 2015, and it wasn't legal, technically a bill passed where you could play until 2019. But that's probably why I won a bunch of money between 15 and 19, because the player pools weren't diluted with bots and people that do that shit for a living.
Ambiguously legal teens. What is this, a Drake podcast? We did it, Reddit.
But that was all in baseball, too. That wasn't even in football.
Sure. So I got a guy, and I want to tie it in because you talked about Jimmy Graham being number two in a season in yards. And the guy that I'm going to cover has both number two, and he played at the U. So we got some commonalities there.
Yep. I didn't know Mason Rudolph played at the U.
Even better. Even better. Not when I say number two, I'm not talking about a jersey number. So today we're going to talk about a kind of mid player who had some pretty interesting off the field stuff. Some of our listeners will know right away what I'm about to get into when I say the name. But if not, strap on in and let's talk about the tale of Najee Davenport. All right.
Okay.
Najee Davenport was born in 1979 in North Carolina, just like Jimmy Graham.
Wow.
As a youngster, he moved down to Florida. He played high school ball there and ended up in playing for the U, right? So not only did he play at the U, but he played on the 2001 Hurricanes, which means he was part of the greatest college football team of all time.
Oh, shit.
Shane, do you know anything about the 2001 Miami Hurricanes?
Nope. Was The Rock on that team? No, he was wrestling at that time.
The Rock was early 90s, and he didn't get any time playing because he was behind Warren Sapp on the depth chart.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. So let me just point out a couple things about this 2001 Miami Hurricanes roster. The other dudes that were in the backfield with Najee Davenport that year were Clinton Portis, Frank Gore, and Willis McGahee.
Damn.
Yeah. So all of those dudes would get drafted. In fact, if you look at the guys that were on that roster and include the redshirted freshmen, 17 dudes on the 2001 Miami Hurricanes became first-round NFL draft picks.
What happened? Like, where did that dynasty just fall off? Was it Bama?
They all just went to other places, I guess. I don't know.
Tim Tebow?
Fuck you. between the guys that already are and those that will be soon, there are five NFL Hall of Famers on this squad. Ed Reed, Hall of Famer. Andre Johnson, Sean Taylor, Frank Gore, and Vince Wilfork were all on this team. So, pretty awesome.
Jesus.
So, back to Davenport. Najee actually got a degree in theater during this time with a minor in education.
Hell yeah.
Dope. So, it's pretty wild to play on one of the most successful teams in college football at one of the rowdiest universities in the country and still get a degree. Furthermore, Ryan and I, we spent a lot of time with theater kids in college, and we know, I'm sure you might know too, Shane, like how demanding those programs can be. Like those are intense programs. So Najee Davenport declares for the 2002 NFL draft. 20 days before the draft on April 1st, 2002, a charge comes down the pipeline and Davenport is arrested for second-degree burglary and criminal mischief. His charge is that he broke into the dorm room of a girl at Barry University, and according to the woman in the room, she was asleep when he woke her up while grunting. Now, I know where your mind goes, because why wouldn't it? But he wasn't doing what you think he was. According to the charges, she woke up to see an soon-to-be NFL football player squatting and taking a giant drunken shit in her laundry basket.
Oh, hell yeah.
So
classic dorm life.
Oh, yeah. So he pleads out of it and gets community service, but he provided an excellent quote that I needed to share. Quote, "Where's the evidence? Where's the manure? I know I didn't do it. I just want to get it over with."
This is a weird question, but like, can you imagine how big football players' shits are?
Oh,
like how much they eat? Like that had to be a child, right? Like,
yep, you're buying a whole new wardrobe.
I think it was probably like 20, 21 Keurigs.
So, as an homage to his arrest, Najee Davenport gets drafted by the shittiest organization in football, the Green Bay Packers. He gets hazed by his new team. He earns the nickname Dump Truck, which is pretty good. Yeah. They put a porta potty by his locker during training camp.
Oh, hell yeah.
There was a campaign to get him to wear jersey number 2 in practice.
I thought you were going to say that they put like a laundry basket next to his.
So he's a fourth round pick and he's more of a rotational back given the fact that he can't hold onto the ball to save his life. In his first 2 years in the league, he has 5 fumbles on 127 touches. Not good.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He always had a pretty good yards per carry number, but because he was talented, but he was never meant to be like the lead back in a backfield. He can't stay healthy in Green Bay. He ends up going to Pittsburgh for 2 seasons. He's a spot starter, rotational guy, limited success. He'd have like a good game once in a while and fill in admirably, but he played 8 years and only had less than 400 carries. So whatever. He ends up retiring in 2008. In 2007, he's charged with a domestic and found not guilty by a jury.
Was he shitting again?
I really got to find dudes that don't have domestics on their record, but now that you know that he most likely sucks at least a little bit, I think it's easier to laugh at him getting hazed for taking a dump in someone's laundry basket.
I mean, like, I hate to be like the we shouldn't quote-unquote profit off of bad people, but like, I'm not going to sit here and just read stats to people, right? I got to give a little juice, right? There's right. nuance to like this complex celebrity culture we have, and they're just piece of shit humans.
And as a non, I'm going to come out right now staunchly opposed to domestic violence. Brave of me, I know.
Yeah, very brave, Tony.
But I'm also going to come out as a fan of the fact that this man broke into someone's dorm room and shit in their laundry basket. I think this is really a separate the art from the artist type of moment. You know what I mean? So this last part of the Najee Davenport story is super interesting. In 2020, Davenport and a fellow retired NFL player by the name of Kevin Henry sued the NFL. Kevin Henry, also cousins with WWE wrestler Mark Henry, by the way. Small world.
Someone gave their ass beat.
That's what I'm saying.
Big world.
Yeah, the salmon suit. So the lawsuit claims that the league used a process of race norming when determining cognitive impairment when they were settling with players after the concussion lawsuit. So let me explain. Thanks to that one Will Smith movie, the league decided they had to start paying out concussion settlements. Remember?
Yeah.
So former players would give them their neurocognitive test scores from doctors to prove brain injury to qualify for compensation. Now, according to this lawsuit, the league used a racially based sliding scale when determining impairment.
Jesus fucking Christ.
So the league basically said black players come into the league with a lower cognitive ability than white dudes, so they have to be really fucked up now in order to qualify for settlement money.
What is this, fucking phrenology?
That's what I'm saying, right? So eventually this lawsuit, there's thousands of players put their names on this suit. And in October 2021, those players and the league settle out of court and the league quietly ended race-based adjustments in testing related to concussion settlements. The thing that freaked me out the most about this is not that one of our largest corporations was doing some fucking social Darwinist shit, but The fact that I don't remember hearing about this. This was 2021.
Yeah, this was, well, God bless the man-created virus of COVID to distract us from this inconvenient truth.
I'm sure, dude, Aaron Rodgers has such a big brain, it's going to be impossible for him to prove any sort of CTE.
I would love to hear Aaron Rodgers' opinion on this subject.
Oh, God. So that's Najee Davenport. He played on the best college football team of all time. He shit in a laundry basket, and now he spent his time getting retired black men proper compensation for their injuries.
Dude, so, that's fucking crazy, man. Like, I had no idea.
It's a weird story. Najee Davenport.
The NFL fucking sucks.
Yeah. Yep.
Nah, dude. Nah, it was Fauci.
Fauci's got the fucking, the pinchers measuring the head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck. All right. So a few weeks ago, Tony covered a guy who got bigger and badder as years progressed until he fell off a cliff. This week, I'm covering someone who just got bigger until he fell off a cliff. I'm talking former Carolina Panther and Buffalo Bill, Kelvin Benjamin.
Oh.
Whoa. Okay.
So Kelvin Benjamin did have a pretty rough upbringing, as his father was deported to Jamaica when he was really young, and he would spend half his middle school experience in juvenile detention centers. He would end up graduating high school at the age of 20 because he had to repeat the third and seventh grade. It actually made him ineligible in high school due to his age restrictions.
Wait a minute, Shane. Are we talking like a Adam Sandler, like Billy Madison thing, where he's like 20 years old and he's got to repeat the third and the seventh grade?
No. So he I wish, that'd be sick, right? Just playing pickup basketball with a bunch of eight-year-olds. Yeah, so it actually made him ineligible to play football, because I think we talked on way back in the day that high school eligibility, you can only be a certain age to play, because obviously if you're 6'5", 210 pounds, it's really not fair to beat up on small children.
Yes.
So he ended up being I think it was a 4.5 star recruit coming into college. So he would redshirt in his first year and would end up declaring after his sophomore season, foregoing his last 2 years of eligibility to enter the NFL draft. And he was, as he was graded as a first rounder, he still would be drafted at the age of 23 years old, Bo Nix time, 28th overall to the Carolina Panthers.
Yep.
So four receivers were gone from the Panthers in this offseason. So the demand was there, especially for someone who was considered to be the sixth best wide receiver in the class. So at the time, Benjamin was the last rookie receiver in a 10-year span to record a 25-plus yard touchdown in three of the first four games, joining just only Randy Moss.
Ooh.
And he also joined, or sorry, he was also one of two other rookies in 30 years to put up over 300 receiving yards in the first four games.
Damn.
In his rookie season, he went 73 for about a little over 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns.
Okay.
So Kelvin Benjamin would then tear his ACL in training camp in 2015, and this is kind of where it all goes downhill, and his vitriol for Cam Newton stems. So this was before my time, but this was definitely the Super Cam era, where he went 15-1, won MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Pro Bowler. Yep. And for some reason, Kelvin Benjamin really holds a grudge against Cam, as he was quote-unquote a bad fit for him as a quarterback, even though Cam did give him 1,000 yards in his rookie season.
Yep.
So Kelvin Benjamin would then be traded to the Bills in 2018 for a third round pick, where he would end up tearing his meniscus and would re-injure it in his comeback game, and he would still continue to trash the Panthers and Cam Newton. He was then released in 2018 after putting up a 35% catch rate, which was worst in the league.
Wow.
Whoops. So the Chiefs did the funny thing like they always do and give everybody hope in fantasy football, and he didn't do shit that year.
That's true.
So before he was cut on the Bills, he showed up to camp at 280 pounds, 40 pounds over the recommended weight for his position.
Jesus.
So he weighed more than Gronk.
That's crazy.
He was a large man.
I remember him being big, but I don't remember that season. Holy crap.
Well, because he wasn't getting any snaps because he was too big. Can I just point out really quick, he was taken 28th overall. 36th overall in that draft was Derek Carr.
Oh, what? Good. Dude, the world is all connected.
But I just want to point out that they took, because like there's some first round picks like OBJ. Obviously, yeah. You would have taken him if you could have. Mike Evans was 7th overall, but they took him over pick 53 overall, Devontae Adams.
Shit.
Pick 61 overall, Allen Robinson. Even pick 63 overall, Jarvis Landry would have been better.
Yeah.
Hey, man, yep. Some of them are OBJ, some of them are QJs. I don't know what you want. All right.
It's fair. They're all J's.
Yep. So Benjamin would then sign to the Giants and be placed as a tight end due to his size, but was cut for stealing food from the facility to take home.
What?
Which is bullshit, by the way. I remember that story. That's bullshit.
Yeah, it wasn't real. That's what I was going to say. I wish it was true, because that'd be really fucking funny. He just wasn't cutting it for the team, so they let him go. And he did say that it wasn't a fair trial for him due to some weird explanation he had. So there is a dichotomy on here, because he was like really fucking roasted by the NFL fandom. Especially people who like lash out and project their insecurities on people. But yep. Dude did make money. He made something out of nothing. Been a really hard life. So I can't really like hate on the guy too much, right? He's not like a giant piece of shit like we talk about. It's just kind of a dude who's like, this is kind of my apex.
Yeah.
Yeah, just one of those small time dudes, a little funny blurb of here's a little meme about him if he was too fat and he stole food.
Yeah, I just remember that video of him like walking sadly off the practice field.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just know, right? You're like, well, this is just the end of my career.
It's weird. I can't think of the last time a slow receiver that can't separate that played college football at Florida State was drafted in 20s to 30s. Anyways, must be a coincidence. Kelvin Benjamin played in Buffalo too. Mm-hmm. Anyways, moving on. Keon Coleman's probably better. So hey,
apparently Chase Claypool's the best looking receiver out there.
I always think back to that one tweet from 2020, summer of 2020 or whatever, where the beat reporter was like, oh yeah, Ishmael Smith-Marset is running ahead of Justin Jefferson in training camp. He looks great. So I always keep that shit with a grain of salt.
Or when they said the Chargers passing offense looked phenomenal last year. Guess what? Defense was just shit.
Yep. They're just playing against bad people. Right.
Is it my time?
It's research time. Well, let's do it. We've got the Carolina Panthers.
Do I got the mic now? All right. So I told my dad today at lunch, I was like, he's like, oh, what team are you covering this week? I said, the Carolina Panthers. He said, ew, why would you do that? You can't pick any other team. And I said, no, we're doing all 32. So it doesn't matter if they're good, bad, what the perception is. We're getting all the value out that we can.
I was hoping he was going to say who.
Nah, my dad does like ball. He does different perceptions of players, right? Like he values like the Jalen Guyton types, where I'm like, he's just trash. he is a Robbie Chosen Anderson fan, which I do appreciate.
That's hard.
Yeah. That's hard. I think we're just used to like being bad.
Yeah.
So once again, we're starting over from scratch, even though we already started from scratch this year or last year with the Panthers. So if you want a lesson on how to tank, don't do what the Panthers did. They short sold all their assets to overspend on a QB with a coach who never wanted him, and one of the worst receiving rooms in the NFL without their pick the following year. Really, really bad. Yes. I'm going to try to be as positive as possible here. But again, remember, David Tepper is their owner and he's a certified narcissistic idiot. Right. So I do want to be cautious without having any blinders to the reality of the situation.
Right.
Can I shit on Tepper real quick?
Yeah, I think there's, I don't think I talk about him until like the end. So yeah, let it rip, dude.
Ryan, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I was very shocked, last year when they drafted, Bryce Young over CJ Stroud, but
hindsight, baby.
It is like, yeah, it definitely is the revisionist history, right? Of like every quarterback had warts last year. And then when people took the pick, they're like, meh, it makes sense. It's just like nobody knew how bad Carolina was going to be. Like, I don't know. When I did the preview, I was like, man, they'll be fine. Like, I think Houston's terrible and like fucking egg on my face.
I don't think CJ Stroud would have done as well.
No.
God, obviously. No way.
I want to point out that ever since David Tepper has purchased the Carolina Panthers, they have gone 31-68.
Oh my God. Hey, you want to buy that stadium for us?
Well, they actually, he's asking for city money right now to renovate the stadium, and everyone's like, go fuck yourself.
It's like $160 billion or something like that.
I also wanted to point out Dave Canales will be the seventh either interim or full-time head coach in Carolina in the 6 years that David Tepper has been running that company.
God bless.
Also, he also owns the Charlotte FC, the soccer team.
Yeah.
And this upcoming season, they will be looking for their third new head coach in the 3 years that they've been active.
Oh, my God.
Icky. So.
They should just sign Messi from Miami.
To coach.
Yeah.
Ted Lasso crossover. So yeah, I mean, whatever. Like Shane said, like, this is not how to tank. And, like, if your coach, if you hire a coach who's a quarterback guy, let him pick his quarterback.
So. I think also too, like Frank Reich, not good. It was just over, right? Like consistent history of like, oh, hey, the writing's kind of on the wall. This guy fucking sucks now.
Yeah.
So the first thing first, we do have the cool thing. We do have Dave Canales as the head coach, the QB whisperer who fixed Geno and Baker. They also brought in Brad Isaac, who is from the Canales tree. And he did work as the assistant wide receiver coach in Seattle, assistant QB coach in Seattle, and the wide receiver coach in Tampa Bay. So there is good news on the offense front. So there will be little flags raised here and there of what we should be look out for in regards to personnel, packages, game plan overall tendencies. So we'll start off with the losses and gains of the personnel of the Panthers through free agency before we hit up the draft. So we're going to focus on the offense, but the picks from offloading Brian Burns will come up. So they did let their 30-year-old center go to the Chargers for $1 million. They let DJ Chark go to the Chargers for $3 million. They let 31-year-old Hayden Hurst go to the Chargers. I fucking hate this franchise. LaVisca Chenault walked. They did let three O-linemen go, but it's probably for the best. They did sign Deontay Johnson for $18 million a year, which I think was a really good pickup.
It's only 1 year, though.
I thought it was a 3-year guarantee.
No, he's a free agent next year.
Oh, okay. Maybe this is worse than I thought.
That's why they got him so cheaply. It was a trade. They traded like a fifth for him or something like that.
See, that's what scares me though. Like Pittsburgh knows how to like do wide receivers. And when they offload wide receivers, it makes me like, oh, hold on, timeout.
Sure.
All right. So they did give Robert Hunt $44 million as an offensive lineman. And after looking at his PFF grade, he's well worth the money. He has one sack, one hit, three hurries, and five pressures allowed in 2023. Granted, he only did play 11 games in that season, but there is a little blip, but he's been extremely consistent over his career and is getting better as the season progresses. The strong side is locked down on the offensive line.
I want to say, I think he's the best tight end on this roster. Ryan, Robert Hunt, this dude, remember that Miami Dolphins offensive lineman that decided to catch that pass and score a touchdown?
He did like the 360 in the air when he got hit and they didn't count it, even though he clearly crossed the fucking plane.
Yep, that's him, Robert Hunt.
So Damian Lewis got paid $26 million to be the blindside tackle. While he's not as impressive as Robert Hunt, he did only allow three sacks, one hit, 25 hurries, and 29 pressures across 16 games last year. His worst game last season was against Aaron Donald, so we can kind of wipe that one away. But he is also another guy who has improved as years have gone along. This O-line isn't the sieve that it was last year. Rashad Penny got signed. He's going to disappoint me again. I'm sorry. I'm just addicted.
Yeah.
But yeah, these are the kind of the big moves outside of depth pieces. So we'll look into the draft now. So with spending on the O-line, the team basically drafted weapons for Bryce and defense. So they had no first round pick this year, but they did surprise everybody and moved back 59 slots to 141 to 200 to move up to one slot to grab their guy of Xavier Leggett in the first round to lock down that sweet, sweet fifth round year option.
Hell yeah.
There's a really funny Instagram account. It's like fans of Leggett and it's like all his audio clips and his press releases. And bro, I fucking love him so much.
That's the best accent in football.
It really is. I put the seat of feel on my skin.
Yeah. Ryan, have you heard Xavier Leggett talk? He sounds like Boomer. No. Awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
Great.
They did do some wheeling and dealing to walk away from Brandon Fisk to get 52nd, 155 in a second round next year. They would then trade 52, 155, and 142 to go to 46 to draft what most people would be considered the best running back in the class of Jonathan Brooks. They would use their fourth on Jatavion Sanders. So we'll talk these guys later, but a big theme with these guys is we're going to have to see and wait. Leggett is extremely raw. Jonathan Brooks is coming off an ACL tear. Sanders probably has the potential highest ceiling upside outside of Brock Bowers in this class. But it's just going to take some patience. So it does sort of feel like last year where they took the best of a bunch of mid. And that does also kind of scare me because even though these weren't reaches, but in regards to talent pool, it definitely feels like they drafted Bryce last year. Of like, this is good enough as opposed to like, hey, we're going to pick the players that fit the system best. But again, Dave Canales, I got to put the trust in the system.
Sure.
So we're going to talk Dave Canales a little bit here because that's the new thing of us talking coaches to get understanding of how players are going to be used. So he wasn't used as the offensive coordinator in 2022 when Geno has his career year, but we will look at the tendencies to see the development with Geno with Canales and the regression of Seattle and then compare that to Baker and Tampa. So within the 2 years with Canales, Geno saw the apex of his career in all of his metrics. So it's actually pretty astounding the turnaround that he had during that time period. He had a 69% accuracy, a 7.5 yards per attempt, and a 104 average passer rating.
Yep.
Like that's like elite.
Yep.
So he did see a decline without Canales last year as he had a drop to a 64% accuracy, 7.1 yards per attempt, and a 92 passer rating. So was he the pumpkin I was saying he turned into? No. He's not the same player.
Sure.
So on to Baker Mayfield. Now, we all got this one wrong, so I won't fall on the sword as hard, but I did fuck up on Miles Sanders later. My bad. Baker's an odd case.
Shane, you got to move on. The accident was a year ago. You have to let it go. You have to forgive yourself.
I need to be transparent with our audience, okay? We can call the call. We can call the hits, and we can call the bus. So I got to hit an even spread.
That's
fair. So Baker Mayfield's a really weird case in the NFL because he's had so many fucking coaches. So we are going to take the career averages and compare it to Tampa Bay. So 2020 was Baker's like sicko, quote unquote, almost MVP season, right? He had some really good stats, but they still don't really compare to his time in Tampa. So before Tampa Bay, his average completion rate was 61% in Tampa Bay, 64%. Before Tampa Bay, he averaged 6.6 yards per attempt. In Tampa Bay, he averaged 7.3. Before Tampa Bay, he averaged 212 yards per game. In Tampa Bay, he averaged 238. So in 17 games, that averages out to be the difference between 3,500 and 4,000 yards in a season.
Yep.
And he took a significant leap in his QB rating. He went from 84.5 to 94.6.
Dude, Dave Canales is a fucking wizard. He got Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield to throw for 4,000 yards in a season.
And honestly, dude, like, it does really help when you have, like, way better weapons, right? Like, Mike Evans is way better than whatever receiving corpse Baker Mayfield ever had, just by himself.
And Godwin, yeah.
Yeah. So last year there was a 17.1% target share to the running back position, which Rashad White saw 70 of those targets itself. 63.64% target share to the wide receiver room, where Chris Godwin and Mike Evans basically saw the same amount of targets of 130, and Trey Palmer had 68 targets.
Okay.
Which like seemed crazy to me because I didn't realize that's how much the ball was moving in Tampa.
Sure.
The tight ends got 14.7% of the targets, with 67 going to Ryan's guy, Kate Otten.
Woo!
Tampa was in the bottom 10 of rush attempts per game with 25.4 rush attempts per game, 360 for the entire running back, with Rashad White seeing 75.5% of the snap share. So he was a true bell cow last year.
Yep. I have also 2022 in 15 games, Kenneth Walker in Seattle under Canales had a 64% rushing share. So
Baker also had 34 rush attempts last year that were not scrambles. Tampa ranked 7th in 11 personnel last year at 72.6 of their passing attack coming from that formation, and they were ranked 10th in percentile of points per added, 7% higher than the league average on pass attempts.
So for our audience, can you explain what 11 is?
Yes, so it's one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers.
Yep. Thank you.
So they are hucking that motherfucker down the field. Carolina was 2nd in 11th personnel last year, but at a negative 0.14 expected points per attempt. Bryce had 8 rushing attempts and was sacked 62 times last year. The system was just straight up broken. Bryce Young had a below 60% completion rate, a 5.5 yards per attempt, and an almost 1-to-1 touchdown to interception rate. Bryce was pressured on almost 25% of his passer attempts. There's literally no hope for him last year. If you watch the games, you saw he didn't actually lose to Bryce Young's talent ability. It was due to his offense failing him.
Yeah.
So last year, they were tied in 2nd-to-last on receiving room grade. Sans Adam Thielen, the best rated wide receiver with more than 3 targets per game in that year was DJ Chark, and he was below 60 in PFF's model. Again, there was no hope.
Yeah, but when it comes to Adam Thielen, who's stupid now, baby?
That's right, dude. League winner.
Now.
So we're gonna do the paper math thing with estimating targets based on depth chart. So based on the sheet of the starting wide receiver trio for 11 personnel, it's Deontay Johnson, Xavier Leggett, and Adam Thielen. So Chuba is the starting running back, but as soon as Brooks gets more than 10 touches a game, it's his backfield to play forever. Jatavion Sanders is behind Tommy Tremble on the depth chart, but I think that's another game of patience because who is Tommy Tremble?
Right.
So if we do the lateral transitions of expectations, Deontay is going to do the Mike Evans thing of running primarily outside because I believe his career average is like over 80% of his snaps are out wide. Leggett is going to be the intermediate type and Thielen is going to be the slot piece. So this offense doesn't have the gunslinger that Baker is, but it is more of a dink and dunk cerebral attack with Bryce Young. Mm-hmm. So are the splits going to be 130 to Deontay, 130 to Leggett, and 70 to Thielen? Probably not. I could foresee a world where Deontay gets 120 targets and the remainder of the bulk is split to more 55 to 45 between Leggett and Thielen, where Leggett will take over more targets as the season progresses and he becomes more comfortable in the system and he builds rapport over Bryce as opposed to Bryce just target locking Adam Thielen for 14 targets a game.
But I have a hot take for you.
That first month of Adam Thielen is going to be gas?
No, not that hot. Deontay Johnson, 140 targets this year.
Honestly, dude, out of like looking at the amount of times that they're going to pass the ball this year, not out of the realm of possibility, right? Mm-hmm. Initially, you're probably really skeptical. There's no fucking way that Bryce is going to be able to support that type of volume on this team. Well, I'll say you're probably initially correct in that assumption, but they did make Bryce throw it fucking 36.6 times last year per game.
With no offensive line.
That's in the tiers of Cincinnati, Detroit, Minnesota. Just way, way, way shittier. Is the volume going to stay? Who knows? Based on the volume that Baker threw last year, I'd say it's a really strong chance, especially on a team that is probably going to have to push the ball down the field, and they're more than likely going to be playing losing. So they're going to have to try to play to hurry up offense, check downs, and try to push the ball more and more. But efficiency is going to dramatically increase. Is it going to be league breaking? No, but I think Bryce won't look like a bust completely, which is going to honestly rule. If we see a projected increase of accuracy in yards per attempt with Bryce, with what we saw with Geno and Baker, we'll call it a 5% increase in accuracy, an increase to around 6.8 yards per attempt. That would put Bryce in pretty league average numbers, but the volume is what the juice is here. So the average between last year in Carolina and Tampa Bay within pass attempts would be 547.5. Passing attempts with 350 completions going for about 5.5 yards per attempt from 6.8 is a gigantic leap from 2,900 yards, which he had last year, to what he could potentially see between 3,500 to 3,800 yards.
That's crazy. I love it. Yeah.
Is he going to be a top 12 QB in fantasy? Probably not, but as the QB we projected him in our draft process last year, we said he was a QB too, right? Like a Derek Carr type. He's good for 14 points. He's not going to give you like a super high ceiling, but he's a really good floor.
Sure.
Currently, he's a 17th rounder. You're not drafting him, but he's a lotto ticket in the tier of Daniel Jones, Drake May, JJ McCarthy. I think it's a fair bet for a flex week play.
This question goes to both of you. Is this the third year in a row that a Dave Canales quarterback is one of the finalists for comeback player of the year?
I think so.
I don't know. I don't know how much Dave Canales can do for this team. We'll see.
All right. Hater.
I think this is, we're going to remember who Bryce is, right? Like it's going to be like the inverse of Mac Jones's career arc, where Mac Jones had a really good rookie year and then it just fucking plateaued and then it fell off a cliff. I think like, I never thought Bryce Young was like an all-star, right? But I thought he was a good quarterback. Like the dude knows how to read a defense. He knows how to get the ball out quickly. But yeah, I don't think they're going to come close to the vision. I think this team has too many holes, but I think he's going to look significantly better.
Sure.
So in best ballers that have the right mindset is Deontay as a 7th rounder, as wide receiver 45, but behind DeAndre Hopkins, JSN, and above Watson and Rashee Rice. I do hate playing floor, and given the assumed suspension of Rice, it's going to take his ADP down on ceiling-wise on points per game. He wasn't really game-breaking anyway, so you're not losing too much. Deontay is my wide receiver / floor flex play in this type of structure, so I don't hate the 11-point floor potential 17-point boom weeks for a guy who's going to get 120 to 140 targets at this point in the draft. I think that's like as juicy as you can get. And I do think he'll honestly fall further in drafts because he's attached to Carolina and no one's really going to want to touch that offense just based on last year.
Right.
Leggett is wide receiver 65 as a 12th rounder and as a late round flyer. Fucking let it rip. He's a DK Metcalf type, and the price of entry of going to have to pass on Cole Kmet, Jahan Dotson, Gabe Davis, and QJ has me kind of all in at that price.
Sure.
He's a dude, again, I would have to be patient on, but he doesn't do shit in the first month. You're going to have a real hard position to understand of, like, do I churn this player? Do I wait? How deep is my bench, right? Where he's probably going to be cut and added a few times on rosters, but I think patience will prevail with him.
Okay.
Adam Thielen is a 14th rounder, so get him for a month and then trade him away for someone who still believes he's got a full season of ability in his under his belt. I honestly think Jonathan Mingo's dead. Is he going to see targets? Yeah, but for how bad he was last year and for how many people they brought in, he's going to need like a Davante Adams style career turnaround to actually be relevant.
Yep. Mingo was bottom fifth in the league in catch rate over expected. And yeah,
he was like a QJ.
Yeah, the JJ Zacharyson year two model was like, hey, a breakout for Jonathan Mingo would be a miracle.
Yeah, true unicorn. So I did mention earlier how I do believe the Panthers will be playing a lot from behind. And you know what that means? My fucking checkdowns.
Let's go.
So you know who got 70 targets last year and 272 carries? Rashad White. So I'm smelling some viability here. And initially, I want to say that I'm going all in on Jonathan Brooks, and I'm going to cut you off and say, we got to get through the crust first so we get to the center of the sweet dessert. Chuba Hubbard, he's a Jag. I'm just going to call it like I fucking see it, dude. He's only had viability because CMC was injured. They didn't have a running back in the room the next year, and then Miles Sanders was ass. I'm not going to apologize again. Tony said I'm done. So there will be a 4 to 6 week viability of Chuba as being the initial running back bell cow of this offense before Brooks does start to see his snap share increase as he does get at back up to full speed. I'm not betting a Breece Hall Herculean recovery because that's just kind of absurd. But if we can get up to 70% of Brooks, who I don't really think is a supreme talent, I think we're still in a really good position to draft him in the 8th or 9th round. He's a guy you will have to have a dedicated bench spot for and hold to churn other players instead of him. But he's in the guy of Raheem Mostert, James Conner, Zach Moss, Jalen Warren, DeAndre Swift, Tony Pollard, who will obviously see more play as the season progresses and points becoming more of a premium as he does get more acclimated to the offense. So I think he's going to have more value as the season progresses. Am I going to prioritize Brooks over those seasons? Over those players. Team structure is going to really depend on it. I did a draft the other day where I snagged Brooks as my RB2 for a dollar in an auction, but then filled out my bench with some garbage in the meantime just to get to that point. But I'm honestly comfortable at this point to take him as a hold and just kind of see what happens. Chuba's a 14th rounder, so if you need 6 weeks of a flex player, it's basically as cheap as you can get for a quote-unquote bell cow role in that role. But once again, he's like Adam Thielen, where he's a churn or a trade candidate once Brooks starts leaving the station. Quick thing on tight end. There's 75 targets at total tight end room in the Canales system last year, and unless Thielen goes down in the slot, I think it's going to be about the same. So Sanders is going to have to be a waiver guy. You're not really going to draft him. I'm not stoked on it. I really want to play this position on this team this year. He's going to be on your waivers the whole time. But yeah, I have a lot of optimism here. But remember, David Tepper runs this team, and he's going to crush every one of our single dreams.
I totally agree with that. I'm very high on Deontay Johnson. I think, you know, he's a great separator. He's the type of dude that, like, I watched a breakdown of some Carolina film, and like, you're seeing the point when Bryce hits his last step of the dropback and you pause it and look at where everybody is. Fucking blanketed.
Yep.
Fucking blanketed. The dude had nowhere to go. And the worst blockers on the team last year were the guards. So you're watching this dude get beaten instantly. Bryce hits the stem of his dropback and nobody's open. And if you got a guy that you know, Deontay, that can play slot, he can play boundary, he can line up like in the backfield, that's a dude that you are going to trust.
Yeah, 100%.
I think Carolina's real stupid for not extending him right now, because if you're betting that these acquisitions get Bryce Young to develop, Deontay's a big part of that.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's honestly, it's going to fuck them in the long run because they're going to have to overpay. Right.
Yeah.
They're going to have to give him a significant amount of money when they could have probably got him cheaper before like the market exploded.
Right. It's price of the bricks about to hit.
Yeah. But so, I mean, that's the purpose of a franchise quarterback, right? You got to eat the shit and be like, all right, dude, we're not as bad as the Raiders when it comes to Raiders, as bad as the Raiders in regards to like money management, but we're going to have to take the L on this loss here. But I think it's as good as it's going to get unless they like draft number one overall next year in regards to like receiving weapons.
Sure.
Sure.
I do have a fun stat before we clear the Panthers off our list. Do you know that Bryce Young had almost a full yard higher of an ADOT than Patrick Mahomes last year?
Dude, the what? GOAT.
But Patrick Mahomes, 62% of Patrick Mahomes' passing yards last year came from yards after the catch. And for Bryce, it was 47.3%.
Oh, shit.
That's really bad. I think this team is going to focus a lot more on the short area. I think that's why you get Leggett to stretch it. You get Deontay to work underneath or in the intermediate, and Mingo to do wind sprints.
Trade him your third, Waleed.
Been waiting. No, it's off the table, baby.
I got to do my research. I got to finish.
Right. So, all right. I do my own research. We're all doing our own research. We're going to come back to you in a moment with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New Orleans Derek Carrs. So
that's right.
We will see you on the other side. And goodbye. Giant drunken shit in her laundry basket.
Oh, hell yeah.